Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talked about the crazy, weird and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and always I will be joined by my co-host, the laudatory Luke Cutforth.
Laudatory?
Last week, we'll be talking about temporal travel and anomalous abuelos.
Ah, abuelos!
But first, we have to thank our patrons, because
thank
they
you.
Voted in this topic. And if you want to vote on topics and get a whole bunch of other stuff, go ahead and join our Patreon.
Do it immediately.
Right now, patreon.com/SciGuys. Also, I've got a question for you.
Please.
For everyone listening, for everyone watching, if you're listening, though, get down to the YouTube comments and answer this question for us. The question is, would you rather travel forwards or backwards in time?
Forwards in time. I used to have a thing where I wanted to live as long as possible, not because I just was determined to live as long as possible, but because I wanted to see as much as of history as possible, but in the forward direction.
The future. You want to see as much of the future as possible.
History, yeah.
You want as much of the future to become your own history as possible. Yeah, I understand that. I understand what you mean. I would also go to the future, because the past is a dangerous place for me.
The past is a dangerous place for you?
Racism, Luke.
Oh, God! Sorry, yes, yes. God, I thought you had some sordid past you hadn't told me about.
Well, that too! So, if you couldn't tell from the intro, this episode is on the science of time travel, a topic that I have tried to avoid in the near enough 4 years that we've been doing Sci Guys. But unfortunately, I'm not the only one that gets to choose what topics we do for Sci Guys. There's a democracy going on that I must, at this current point in time, capitulate to. Anyway.
Hostile takeover incoming.
Exactly, right? Okay. No more votes on the Patreon. I choose all the topics. No. Patrons get to choose topics. They get to vote on topics. And that's why we're doing this today. Thank you all. So, without further ado, let's get stuck into time travel.
I was already in the fourth dimension, but I'm entering it anyway.
So when do you think time travel first popped up as an idea in history?
Oh, okay. So it's definitely going to be a book. It'll be a book. Someone wrote a book, like Lewis Carroll or one of these old dudes from history.
Oh, that's interesting. No, so Wikipedia says, in Hindu mythology, Vishnu Purana mentions the story of King Rayavata, Kakudmi, who travels to heaven to meet the creator Brahma and is surprised to learn when he returns to Earth that many ages have passed. So as I said, that was from Wikipedia. Now, I wouldn't just use Wikipedia as a source, but I am not going to scour through Hindu mythology just for this podcast. That is something I will do in my own time for fun. Another interesting one is also from Wikipedia, because I am currently unable to read Hebrew. It says, in Jewish tradition, the first century BC scholar, a first century BC scholar is said to have fallen asleep and slept for 70 years. When waking up, he returned home and found none of the people he knew, and no one believed his claims of who he was.
I love how I just forgot all of religion.
Yeah.
When I said it was probably a book.
Lewis Carroll. You said Lewis Carroll. I'm like, buddy, there's a whole world out there
of history I completely erased there.
Have you noticed something about those two examples I've just given you? So in the first one, someone goes to heaven and then comes back,
okay,
and many ages have passed. And in the second one, someone falls asleep and wakes up 70 years later. Relatable,
both,
am I right?
In the forward direction.
Only in the forward direction. Yes, exactly. And that's important, but we'll get into why that is just a little bit later.
Because the other one's impossible.
Not necessarily, Luke.
Yes, it is.
First off, let's actually discuss maybe one of the first examples of backwards time travel, because we're not sure when that exactly happened, but this one I found quite interesting. So the Chinese novel Supplement to the Journey to the West from 1640 by Dong Yue features magical mirrors and jade gateways that connect various points in time. The protagonist Sun Wukong travels back in time to the world of the ancients, the Qin Dynasty, to retrieve a magical bell, and then travels forward to the world of the future, the Song Dynasty, to find an emperor who has been exiled in time. However, the time travel takes place inside an illusory dream world created by the villain to entrap and distract him. So that's a bit of backwards time travel, but it's not necessarily the backwards time travel that we usually think of. There's another example as well, which is much, much later on. A Christmas Carol by Dickens from 1843, which has time travel, but you wouldn't think of it as time travel because it's boring time travel. It's basically just memories and then a vision of a possible future. That's not time travel. That's boring. That's just, oh, this is what could happen if I continue being the worst person on the planet. Yeah, people will hate you. dumbass.
I've never thought of A Christmas Tree Out as a time travel book.
I only realized it as being time travel when I started researching this. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, Ebenezer Scrooge does go back with the Muppets in time to look at his old family and whatnot.
Yeah, I just he doesn't go back in time because he doesn't change anything.
He doesn't.
And I think that he's just seeing it. I'm gonna fight you on this one. It's not a time travel.
No, I agree. Yeah. I agree that it's not true time travel, but it is technically some form of time travel, even if you're not able to interact with the past fully. I mean, in one case it's memories, and in the other case it's
like possible future,
possible future memories, I guess.
Possible. But, well, it's not a memory; it's him being dead.
Yeah,
that's not a
it's
memory.
It's a memory of the future.
It's a memory
for
somebody else who's not him.
Anyway, so time travel has been a part of sort of stories for a long, long time. I mean, as you can see, it's kind of initially been sort of fantastical and, you know, sort of more spiritual. And then there was a very definite shift towards it being sci-fi. I mean, when I say time travel now, you think, ah, sci-fi. You don't think fantasy, you know? Yep. Even though Narnia has time travel in it.
Have I ever told you the weird story of the book that Steve Jobs gave out at his funeral that scares me?
No.
Steve Jobs gave out this book at his funeral. I forget the name of it, but it's basically like a Buddhist book. It's written by, I think, a monk or some kind of leader of a kind of Buddhist-y type of thing, right? Autobiography of a Yogi, right? So he gave out this book, and this is Steve Jobs. He's like one of the most successful people, like historically in our generation. Like, he's held up as like, oh, he changed the world. Whether or not he did on his own is up to everyone else. But he's held up as a figure of like, he's smart, he's successful, he all this kind of stuff.
An innovator, all that sort of stuff, yeah.
But he gave out a book at his funeral, Autobiography of a Yogi. I read this book and it scared the hell out of me because it's a book about Buddhism, and Buddhism is an off branch of Hinduism. And so that's kind of why this is relevant, because you're talking about Hindu and Hindu stuff and time travel there. It has these stories of these sort of monks who attain enlightenment, and then they can kind of just like travel in space in like seconds, and they can like appear in visions to people. And it scares me because I'm like, either this is like a load of lies, just an insane amount of lies, because it's said as a factual book. It's like him telling the life or telling the experience of his life, or it's I don't understand anything about the world. And it just freaked me out so much, because especially when you've got like someone who society, and our culture, our zeitgeist holds up as like, this is one of those smart people. Mm-hmm. But then he believed all this stuff that's either earth-shatteringly, world-shatteringly different to our understanding of the world, or just a crock of crap.
Yeah, I find that kind of concept really interesting, because obviously we don't know everything, and there is an interpretation of reality, I suppose, wherein that would be possible alongside all of the things that we understand now. Do you know what I mean? It would just mean that, say, consciousness is not something that just sort of erupts out of the things going on in our brain, right? It doesn't just, you know, come out of that. It's coming from somewhere else, non-local, you know? Like, it's being beamed in, or consciousness has a greater control over the universe than we think, right? I'm not saying that that's the case. I'm just saying that, like, if that were the case, you could see how we could have measured and believed all the stuff that we believe now, and also what that guy says is true. Yep. You could see how that those things could be the case. However, I would say probably that if you did reach enlightenment, you know, and that gave you the power to do all of these things, more people would probably be reaching enlightenment, right? Hopefully.
Depends how hard it is.
Right, yeah, I don't know.
Might be really hard.
I don't know. I just...
Also, they refuse to do their tricks when you ask them. Like when you pray to God to like show you a sign.
Okay, anytime anyone does that, I'm just like, okay, well, come on.
Although there are some tricks in the book that like the person performs, and people are like, wow, you made it smell like roses or something.
Oh, are they going to all be tricks that can be solved by, say, a placebo effect or, sleight of hand or things
maybe
like that?
Maybe.
Buddhist monk wasn't actually reaching enlightenment, just sitting up doing handheld magic tricks on that bloody mountaintop in the monastery. That's definitely an interesting thing. There's some more here before we get into the actual sort of, you know, nitty-gritty of time travel. So, as I said, there was a shift from sort of fantasy to sci-fi for time travel stories. The Time Machine by H.G. Wells in 1895 is, you know, it's not necessarily the first piece of fiction to feature a device to travel in time, you know, a literal time machine, but it is sort of the story that popularized it. I mean, I remember watching the Time Machine movie, I think the newer one, when I was a kid, and I'm like, oh man, that's great, this is really cool. But time machines are such an interesting concept, but they're also understandably quite a new concept in, you know, in the history of time travel.
At least as new as the machine.
Yeah.
We didn't have machines.
I mean to say is if we think of time travel, time machines are kind of intrinsically linked to time travel in people's minds. And in our culture, I would say, right? So it's interesting to sort of pull your head out of that and think, yeah, actually time travel as a concept has existed far, far longer than the concept of a time machine.
Or if a machine
at all. A machine at all, yeah. Yes. So that's kind of a history of time travel in fiction. Why don't we talk about a brief history of time travel in reality? So in 2009, Stephen Hawking held a party and no one turned up. Not because he's unpopular, necessarily.
Yes.
Do you know what this party was all about?
Yes, he held a party for any possible time travelers.
Yeah.
If time travel ever is invented, he wants you to come back and come to the party.
Yeah.
And no one turned up.
Right.
Did he actually do this?
Okay,
is this a real thing that he actually did?
So apparently, this is what happened. This is the story, right? He had a party in 2009 for time travelers. He did not say when the party was or where the party was until afterwards. He publicized it afterwards. And that was sort of the thing, right? Because the only way that you could get to this party is if you have the information from the future to know where and when it is.
What a legend.
People say jokingly, people definitely are saying this jokingly, they're not saying it seriously, that this proves that time travel never becomes possible on Earth. Obviously, that's not the case because maybe Stephen Hawking just isn't popular. Maybe there's a reason you can't come back to this time. Maybe if you have a time machine, it can only take you back to when the time machine was created.
Mm-hmm.
But also, this bugs me, right? Because if you were, say, you know, have a party and then tell people the details of it afterwards, of course, that's not going to work because you've already had the party. You've already had the party. And so if no one shows up to the party, then you've locked yourself into a universe.
It depends on which type of time travel is the true one.
Exactly. And so it infuriates me that this is, because if you're going to make a joke, Stephen Hawking, if you're going to say, Stephen Hawking, I don't believe in time travel, ha ha ha, make a joke that actually makes sense. Be consistent, you dead man. I just realized he's dead. I'm getting really mad at this dude that's been dead for a bit. Anyway, so my point is that the best way to have run this experiment, the absolute best way to have run this experiment, is to have set up a party wherein, Schrodinger's box it, right? So you set up a party and you have cameras, say, all around the room. So if people show up to this party, right, then you will know. However, you have the camera set to record, and you save that recording, and you store it away until after you have released the details of where and when the party is, right? Because that way, you've not sort of collapsed the waveform. You've not collapsed the probability by observing that there was no one at the party before you release the information for the party. Because if you've observed that, then of course no one can come back in time unless we're in a universe where you can change the past. But if you can change the past, then in your memory, in that current moment, it always would have been the case.
When you're saying observing, do you mean looking at the videotapes?
Yeah.
So that's one specific type of that's an interpretation of quantum mechanics where consciousness is collapsing the wave function rather than interaction with anything collapsing the wave function.
Yeah, I get that interaction with anything collapses the wave function, but my point is that we can't measure. We wouldn't be able to measure it, right? It would have already been measured, but we just won't be aware of what that measurement was, right? So if you have a party and no one shows up, it doesn't matter if you release the details of that in the future. You know that no one has shown up. So you're like, you know what I mean? By virtue of the fact that I could say right now, hey, time travelers, any time traveler throughout any point in history, if, I swear to God, if you do exist, come back to this exact time and place right now. Do it.
Should we have a party now? Time travelers? We close our eyes and we're having a party.
I'm being so silly. Okay, so any time travelers that are watching this, okay? Next time SciGuys has a live show, go to that live show.
Yeah.
Go to that live show, and in a future episode after the live show, I will give a code to say at the live show. And when I say a code to say at the live show, what I mean is you write the code down on a piece of paper and you slip it into a little box. We hold that box, and if anyone gets the code right, then we know they were time travelers. We don't open the box until after we've released the code. I'm not saying that consciousness necessarily is the only thing that collapses the waveform. But what I'm saying is that it is, at least for us, from our perspective, it definitely does do that.
What
right?
about if you invent a time machine, right?
Right.
And then you check the newspapers of the day that Stephen Hawking held that party, and suddenly it turns out that actually there were loads of people at the party and you all just didn't notice.
What do you mean you didn't notice?
As in, you've now entered a universe where time travel exists.
Okay, yeah.
And so because of that, time travel then backpropagates through your entire timeline, and actually there were people at that party.
Yeah, but then how would you, you'd have to hold both memories, right? In that sense, we can talk about this more later, but in that sense, your memories of the past would become effectively your memories of the future, by which I mean you just are able to conceive of all possible, all possibilities, or rather, you're able to conceive of any possibility, and which one actually happens is kind of irrelevant, because they're all possible for them all to happen, and therefore in this way they kind of all have happened.
I feel like about 5% of people know what we're on about right now.
That's why we're gonna get into time travel first before we get into all of this really weird paradox stuff. So future time travel, this section of my notes is called Why Time Travel is Possible, and I just want to hop in before the pedants get down in the comments and start telling us future time travel is in fact possible, we're all time traveling into the future just at a rate of 1 second per second. We know. Are you going to tell someone who says, I want to travel through space? Oh, you're already traveling through space. In fact, you're actually just traveling through space on spaceship Earth. Shut up. No one likes you. You're not interesting. Everyone knows this. We're having conversations. Sometimes we say things that aren't literally exactly what we mean. We're just simplifying, because spending this amount of time clarifying is pointless. Apart from pedants like you, you're the ones that make it necessary. You've wasted all of our time. So, yeah, I mean, forward time travel technically is possible. We're all traveling into the future at 1 second per second. Roughly.
Not when you walk. When you walk, it's slightly different.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. So, the reason that Luke is saying that walking changes the speed at which you travel forward in time is because of Einstein. And what specifically about Einstein?
So, Einstein, he did all that stuff about E equals MC squared and relativity and all those things.
There you go.
So, basically, the reason why when you walk, you move slightly slower through time is because you have a maximum speed through which you can move through anything, whether that's time or space.
But yeah, importantly, when Luke says that you can travel in space and time, that's because in this theory, space and time are kind of like interchangeable concepts. They're linked as space-time. So you travel through both space and time. We can get into a more in-depth explanation in a sec, but that's what you're meaning there, right?
Yeah. So basically, right now, wherever you are, we're sat down. Are you sit down? Are you sat down? Hopefully you're having a nice sit. If you're walking, then you're slowly sinking away into my past at a very, very tiny rate. So you're currently moving. If you're sat down, if you're sat still, you're currently moving into the future at the speed of light, right? Weird, I know, strange. That's the maximum speed you can have through space-time, space and time. So what that means is that when you move at a speed through space, that speed is minused from your... It's actually a little bit more complicated than minused, but that speed basically is taken away from your speed, the speed that you're moving into the future.
Yeah.
So you have a maximum velocity through space-time of the speed of light. So when you move through space, you take some of your speed away from the speed that you're moving through time.
So we would normally think of ourselves as not being able to change the speed at which we move through time, it just being a consistent sort of, you know, from cause to effect at the same rate like all the time. It's really difficult to talk about this when our concept for measuring time is time. Anyway, so we would normally think of our ability to move through time as constant, and our ability to move through space as being something that is malleable, right? I can change the speed at which my hand moves through space. I can't really change the speed at which my hand moves through time. But what Luke is saying is that we don't move through space and time separately. We move through space-time. So we have a maximum speed that we can move. And the speeds that you move through space and through time both contribute to that. Moving faster through space means you need to move slower through time, because otherwise you'll break your speed limit, right? Like that's why that happens. Because faster through space means slower through time. Slower through time means faster through space. This is how it kind of builds up. It's way more complex than we're going to be letting on, not just because we think you won't be able to understand it, but because we don't understand it, because we're not physicists studying specifically this for our entire lives. It's all very complex stuff, and even the people at the top disagree. Like Stephen Hawking, for very famously, was not a fan of time travel. He just thought this is nonsense, all of this stuff. Einstein said, okay, well, these things could technically exist, I suppose, within my theory. This is why you've got things like Einstein-Rosen bridges, which could theoretically, you know, be modes of time travel. We'll get into what those are specifically in just a sec. But yeah, space-time is one thing, so time is not what you conceive it to be. It's almost like another dimension. Not another spatial dimension, but another dimension that is in some ways different.
Yeah.
That
makes about as much sense as the whole thing makes sense.
This is the really annoying thing about trying to do an episode on time travel, and the reason that I didn't want to bloody do it in the first place is because there's no limit to the explanation. Because as soon as you're like, as soon as you say, okay, well, here's a concept that's simplified somewhat, you're like, okay, well, actually, that doesn't make a full and complete sense unless, okay, well, I'll explain this and I'll try and simplify that a bit, but actually that doesn't really give you the full picture. So mm-hmm. I'll take in all these other concepts and I there's only so much you can simplify this down, and then suddenly, okay, you're trying to explain all of time travel when realistically you don't really understand it yourself, because it's a lot of it is maths and you know, physics equations and whatnot that we don't necessarily read to understand. We read more of the explanations that come out of those equations. And I can look at the equations and be like, these are letters and numbers. And I can parse through them and try and figure out what they're meaning. But ultimately, like, it's really, it's tough stuff.
Yeah,
it's tough.
The interesting thing about this, though, is that ultimately, this stuff about the speed through which you move through space and time, that's ultimately just trigonometry.
Oh, that's
really
easier.
Interesting. Yeah. It's like really simple, like high school maths of triangles, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Where like you're calculating like a vector upwards and to the right, and then like the square. What is it? A squared plus B squared equals C squared. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So you're finding the square root of C. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is because that's not the complicated stuff. You know, that's the much easier stuff. It's when you start getting into the really sort of the bounds of our understanding of physics, where they're trying to marry sort of, you know, quantum mechanics with everything else and saying, oh, wait, hold on. This doesn't break the rules of quantum mechanics, so it's okay for quantum sort of particles to do this, like sort of quantum, this to happen in the quantum realm. But as soon as we get into the sort of realm that we experience the world in, this isn't possible. Oh, well, okay, we'll try and find something that puts these together. Physicists are working very hard, but they cannot agree.
And then someone will introduce you to the concept that light moves so fast that it doesn't experience time at all. And then it's like, whoa, everything's so confusing.
and then there's things like, oh, there's only one photon and one electron in the entire universe. It's just like a different...
Sure, it's just popping up everywhere.
It's popping up everywhere because it doesn't experience time linear. It's...
Anyway, time travel, Gary. Time travel. How would we travel forward in time?
Well, we only touched on the beginning of the topic of space-time. Something else I need to bring up is how gravity interacts with space-time. There is a very, very simple explanation of this, a very, very simple sort of visual demonstration that I absolutely love, and I'm going to explain to you because there are people who are listening and I forgot to prepare for this. So think of space-time as a sheet. As sort of like a bed sheet, let's say, like a blanket that is spread quite taut. Now, obviously, space-time is not sort of on a two-dimensional plane. We exist in three dimensions, and there are more than three dimensions. But there are three spatial dimensions.
That we know of.
This is why I keep on stopping myself, because I'm like, no, should I say that? how much do I want to? Yeah. Like, how difficult do I want to make this for you?
We just want to know how to go forward in time.
Exactly. So imagine space-time as a sheet, right? Now, it's just a bed sheet spread taut. Now, if you take a weight. That would be gravity. You drop that weight on the sheet. What happens to the sheet? It's no longer flat and taut as it should be. It starts to distort the shape of it, right? Like, it would drop down where that ball is. Now, if you think about this, if you were to sort of... do you know those things that you used to get in McDonald's where you take a coin and you spin it around and it goes around and around and then it finally drops in?
Yep.
Think of an orbit as being kind of like that, right?
Except there's no air.
No, I know there's no air. I know. Also, it's not on a two-dimensional plane like that. It's okay. Think that's kind of what it's like, right? Yeah. Where gravity warps space-time, and that's why things are drawn together, and that's why time is funny when it comes to different sort of levels of gravity in different areas. I'll be more specific in a second, right? But when you take that sort of analogy, the really important thing to remember is that we're not talking about this many dimensions. You need to do this thing that is really bloody difficult to do in a human brain because we're not built for it, is to take that and then imagine it in more dimensions. So we have three spatial dimensions that we know of that we are sort of aware of. You know, that would be... So do you want to explain the three spatial dimensions?
Up, down is one, left, right is one, forward, back is one.
Exactly. So when you've got a graph, right, you've got the x-axis and the y-axis. Now, that's a two-dimensional graph, right? It's two dimensions, as in you can go in the x direction or the negative x direction or the y direction and the negative y direction. So that's two... That's literally two-dimensional. When you add in the z-axis, suddenly you've got depth, right? So you can go forward or back in the z direction. That's what dimensions are, right? It's the sort of, think of it as sort of where can you move, right? So if a two-dimensional thing, that can only move up and down and left and right. It literally can't move through, you know, it can't move in the z-axis because it doesn't have a concept of depth. There's no way to move through that z-axis. We can move up, down, left, right, and forward, back. Yep. I guess, right? That's the easiest way to sort of consider it. Now, there are more dimensions than that. We can also move through time as well. That's the fourth dimension, but it's not a spatial dimension. Now, because space-time is not this two-dimensional sheet, it's actually four-dimensional, right? That means that when we take this analogy, we've got to then expand it in our heads to fit four dimensions. So instead of displacing, you know, this sort of two-dimensional plane into a third dimension, we are displacing a three-dimensional plane into a fourth dimension, right?
Probably. The way I find it is easiest to explain is to collapse all of space, all three dimensions, into one dimension.
Yeah.
So the space is the y-axis.
Sure.
And time is the x-axis.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds weird, but it doesn't actually do anything to the math.
Oh, you can collapse these three into one.
You're good. So now you're just imagining a graph where up is time and left, right is space. Is that the right way around? X and Y?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Where were we?
Look, these explanations are obviously coming from me, and I don't know the underlying mathematics of it all, you know, specifically. I try to understand that and then also look at lots of different explanations from lots of different people who hopefully do understand the underlying mechanics far better than I do. But there might be some sort of mistakes or inconsistencies here, and I would very much thank any physicists to please go into the comments and be polite, please be polite and just give any corrections that you can give, because we love getting corrections, we love learning, we love being more knowledgeable, but be polite and be nice and we'll all get along. So that's kind of how space-time works. That means essentially, and if you've seen that Nolan film, then you know this already, that gravity can also change the speed at which you move through time, or rather the rate at which you move through time. So instead of moving through time at 1 second per second, you will move through time at, a different number of seconds per second, depending on the gravity that you're experiencing at that moment. If you were to, say, start to approach a black hole, something that is very, very dense, and, you know, there is a lot of gravity going on around there, right? That's really displacing space-time. It's taking the mass of many suns and collapsing them into an area, you know, that is the size of even... a country or a state or, you know, a city sometimes. Like, black holes take a lot of mass and just crush it right down into a small space. And because that happens, that means that, boom, like, I mean, if you think about this as, like, you know, something the weight of a bowling ball or the mass of a bowling ball, but the size of a marble, if you put that on a sheet of, if you put that on, like, a taut sheet, that is going to pull it, like, down really, really, really far. It could even tear through it if you drop it and it, you know, and it's got enough momentum there, it can tear right through. Black holes do a similar sort of thing in that they displace a lot more. Think of it like pressure, I suppose. Pressure on space-time. Mm-hmm. they're exerting a lot of pressure on space-time. And so they're distorting it a lot. And that means that as you approach a black hole, your time is different. So my time would go, I guess, more slowly than your time. So if I go up to a black hole and I sit there for, you know, say, a year, I could leave it and say 227 years could have passed for Luke. And I've spent a year next to this black hole, and I come back, and I'm like, hey, Luke, how you? I took a year off. Oh, you're dead!
Yeah.
And your children are dead!
No more
Sci
Guys.
And their children are dead! Would your great-great-grandchild like to do Sci Guys with me? Awesome!
Sure. I'm sure they would. I'll leave them Sci Guys in my will.
But yeah, so that's one mode of sort of form is time travel, in that you just kind of alter how you experience time. And you may think, hey, this isn't... Well, do you really need things as dense as black holes? Can we notice this? Yes, we can notice this. We've spoken about this on the podcast before. There's GPS systems that need to take into account outcome of relativity, by which I mean GPS systems are, you know, they're flying around the planet, they're in orbit, you know, and they're moving at speeds and they're experiencing gravity in such a way that the clocks on those GPS systems will not match up with the clocks on Earth, right? So think of it this way, like we talk about our time being different. If you put a clock on a train and a clock on the ground, the clock on the train is going to be ticking at a different speed than the clock on the ground because they're experiencing time differently. You put a clock on a spaceship, you put a clock on a satellite, they're going to experience time differently than the clock that's on the ground. But we need both of those clocks' times to match up, right? Because obviously it's only little tiny changes, but over time that sort of builds up, right? If you've got a clock that's running at, you know, 99% the speed of another clock, you wouldn't notice it necessarily immediately, but after a couple hours, after a couple days, after a couple years, that 99%, it's going to be quite a bit, right?
And it's also going to be a bit because what you're using time for in that situation when you're a satellite is you're using it to calculate the speed of light. Mm-hmm. And the speed of light is 300 million meters a second?
3 times 10 to the 8 meters per second.
So yeah, three or lots of zeros after it.
300
so
mil.
Even if your clock is like only a tiny bit off, that's going to be like the difference of you being in like the next town or something.
Yeah.
When you actually come to use your GPS.
Yeah, exactly. Like these small changes have much bigger sort of implications. And so we need to be specific with this. And that's really bloody cool. So this is not just theoretical. Like, oh, if you were to fly up to a black hole, this is literally how you know where you are. Like City Mapper wouldn't work if we didn't have an understanding of relativity. And that's so cool. Astronauts that get shot into space come back a little younger than they would have been if they were sat on the ground, which mm-hmm. is insane, right? They come back younger and a little bit taller. I mean, we're selling all of these anti-aging technologies to shoot them shoot people into space.
They come back a little taller. That's because of the gravity.
That's because of the gravity.
I think you're going to confuse some
people. No, I know. I was about to explain.
They come back taller? Is that because they age at a different rate so they grow?
No. Like when you're in microgravity,
yeah.
You don't have gravity essentially pulling down on your spine. Gravity's not pulling down on your spine. You don't have the weight of your body compressing your spine. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, you basically kind of grow a little bit because your spine decompresses slightly and you're just, you know, a little bit taller by a couple, maybe centimeters or so. But then over the course of your life, you do shrink because of, you know, the constant just downward force on your spine. It just compresses because you've got all of your body weight just pushing down. It's really interesting. I love science. So that is space-time. That is how gravity can affect the rate at which you travel through time. That's all very straightforward when it comes to time travel. It's very simple. Now, that is only forward travel. And the interesting thing about this as well is that it means that if you were to do that, you know, if you were to go to a black hole or you were to approach the speed of light, that would take an immense amount of energy, right? I mean, getting to 99% the speed of light is going pretty bloody fast. And also, it means that as you, this is another thing that happens, as you increase your speed, your mass, your effective mass increases, right? So as you increase your speed towards the speed of light, and when we say speed of light, in this case, we're talking speed of light in a vacuum. So as you increase your speed towards the speed of light, your mass also, your effective mass also increases to... basically reaching towards infinity. So once you hit the speed of light, you've effectively got infinite mass, and so you'd need infinite energy to increase your speed further. That's why you've got a hard limit as the speed of light for things that have mass. So moving forward in time, is actually quite difficult. It's relatively easy, relatively speaking, but moving forward in a way that is remotely useful to humans in any, in the way that we would think of in sort of fiction and whatnot, that is really, really difficult, and we're not necessarily capable of doing that now. It would take galaxies worth of energy to move, X number of years in the future and only experience it as Y time. It's insane the amount of energy that you need. Like, it's beyond our current comprehension. All of the energy in the world... And then way more than that, because that's a blip, universally speaking.
Well, thank goodness we have so many galaxies then. We can all go into the future. We don't need them all. There's loads of them.
And when we get to the future, where have all the galaxies gone? What's this? Why is there no galaxies? Is it just, we're just going to do climate change, but
with galaxies.
But with the entire universe. So that is future travel, right? As far as time travel goes, easy. Nothing. Blah, whatever. You can do that in your sleep, literally. And in fact, you do it in your sleep. Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
I think it is, but it's rather quiet this time.
Well, Luke, we want to keep a big old secret about this SciGuys merch.
Yes, please do not tell anybody, and do not purchase any of it. Otherwise, people will find out.
They might see you wearing our merch or displaying our merch and think, oh wow, what a cool person. And I'll tell you this, as a cool person myself, having people think you're a cool person can be very, very stressful.
Yeah, we can't have that. And we also can't have you supporting the show to exist that you're enjoying right now.
Yeah, so absolutely, under no circumstances, should you go to normalcitizen.store and pick up some SciGuys merch. Some SciGuys merch like beanies and posters and t-shirts and calendars and cool stuff like that. Definitely don't go to that store and buy that.
Goodness me, that's an awful lot of stuff that I'm not going to purchase.
Absolutely, Luke. Now let's get back to the show before anyone listens to us.
God, I really hope we got away with that one.
That's all of that. That's the easy stuff. Past travel. Do you know anything about traveling into the past?
No. No, I don't, because you can't. I keep saying this. As far as we understand it, you can't.
I mean... That's not...
Because you can't have negative velocity.
But there's... Okay, there are some things I've been reading about, and now I don't know how agreed upon these are, but they're in pretty much every article. They're spoken about by a number of different people. I know that Stephen Hawking, as I've said a number of times, was a big sort of proponent of time travel just not being possible. But have you heard of something called a closed time-like curve?
No.
A CTC. Now, okay, so... I don't understand this, and I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I don't understand this completely. I have a grasp on it. I've managed to figure it out a little bit. So from what I've gathered, a closed time-like curve is a way of traveling sort of to the past, and coming back to the point that you left without having to necessarily travel backwards in time. You effectively travel backwards in time, but from your perspective, you're still kind of moving forwards in time. It's just sort of time is looping back on itself, and then you meet the point where you left and carry on. So from your perspective, you are in one consistent sort of
direction,
right. sort of universally speaking direction. We're not talking about spatial direction here. Remember, we're talking about direction through space-time.
Yeah.
So you're moving consistently through one direction. Think of it like this, okay? So let's say you've got a piece of paper and you've got an ant that can move along that piece of paper, right? So the ant moves from there to there, right? Boom, this is...
Audio podcast.
Okay, so for the people listening, Luke is going to give a little explanation as I'm doing it, but for the people watching, you can come and watch. So you've got a piece of paper, and an ant starts on the leftmost part of the paper and can move towards the right. It can move, actually, anywhere on the paper.
Freedom.
But bear in mind, it can only move, on the plane of the paper, right? It can't sort of jump. It can't... pass through the paper or anything. It's like us in space-time. We can't jump out of space-time. We have to travel through space and time. we are stuck doing that. In the same sense that this ant is stuck moving through, like, moving on the plane of this paper, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I were to say, you know, let's say if I were to have a strip of this paper, you know, so I'm just going to rip it so it's easier to do this demonstration. But,
just fold it.
Yeah, well, fold it, let's say, right? So let's say that this is all of space-time, right? So I've just folded the paper so it's a little bit easier to demonstrate this. Now, if I were to bend the paper around, sort of thing...
Sicarius kind of like looping it on itself. Basically, he's made a loop-de-loop out of paper.
Yeah, now, there's this piece of paper is not space-time, and it's very difficult to explain this.
That piece of paper's not space-time.
So if
I
you
thought
to,
that was.
I mean, technically it is, isn't it?
What are you doing to space-time, Cory? Leave space-time alone!
Now, if you look at this... the ant can now, if we look at this, if we move, this is really ridiculous. If we look at this, let's say that moving from here to here, so moving from one end of the paper to the other end of the paper,
yeah,
is essentially sort of moving forward in time, right? So the measurement of time is from this end of the paper to the other end of the paper, right?
But through the loop-de-loop, if
yeah,
you're listening.
So if the ant walks along the piece of paper, it goes through the loop-de-loop. Well, hold on, it's going up and around and back through time.
Yeah.
But it's also then meeting the point where it left, as in the loop-de-loop rose off of sort of the loop-de-loop rose off of the plane that the rest of the paper is on, and he follows through and goes back past where he first left the plane that the rest of the paper is on, and then follows through. So from his perspective, he's walking forwards the entire time. He's going forwards through time the entire time. However, if we look at it from our extra-dimensional perspective, because we can see more dimensions than the ant can see, we can see that the ant actually went whoop, back through time, met the point where it left, it left, and then continued on. None of this has broken space-time. It's just bent sort of around in this way. I mean, there's in these sort of examples, a closed time-like curve there's kind of like a tear in space-time that means that such that it loops kind of back on itself, and then you continue on through. So you're traveling backwards in time without, from your perspective, necessarily traveling backwards through time.
But just if you're listening, basically what Corey's described there is that if you imagine you're on a roller coaster and you go... When you are on a roller coaster, you're going forwards the whole time. But if you go round on a loop-de-loop, for part of the time that you're in that loop, you're actually traveling the opposite direction to mm-hmm. the direction you started going in, because you flip 180 degrees upside down. And for that period of time, when you're at the top of the curve, you're actually going in the opposite direction to the direction you started in,
yeah,
even though you've gone forwards the entire time.
Yeah, the roller coaster cart can only move in one direction, and that direction is forwards. But if you bend the track, you can make the roller coaster cart move in a backwards direction.
Yeah.
You know?
So the question would be whether that you can actually do, like... That's all well and good, but if you just ultimately end up where you started anyway, and you can't get off when you're going in the backwards direction, it's not actually helpful for anything.
I mean, I think it is. This is bear in mind, these are simplifications mm-hmm. of this. The idea is that you warp space-time in such a way that it bends back on itself. And
right.
I'm not going to lie, I don't understand that, because space-time is everything that I've ever experienced. I think,
yeah.
Except for consciousness, God knows what that is.
He probably
Maybe
does.
God isn't space-time either. Maybe God is space-time. I don't know,
yeah.
Right? So the concept of bending back all of reality that I can experience on itself is incomprehensible. I mean, I can understand it in concept, but really visualizing it, imagining how it could, it's incomprehensible, really. So I'm not going to be able to give... you know, answer these sorts of questions of like, oh, but what if this, what if that? I don't know, man. I mean, I'm going to maybe try and look into this with some more time, and we can do another episode specifically on closed time-like curves and the sort of real physics behind all of this, if I can understand it and explain it a different way.
Maybe if you decide to understand it and then you travel at the speed of light and you go forwards in time and ask yourself the explanation, and then you go through a closed time-like curve to get back here and you can explain it to us.
Oh, mate, you're getting so close. You're getting, we're almost there. So now I want to kind of talk about, I kind of want to, there's some other methods of sort of traveling to the past. There's also these things called Kerr black holes. Now, we've spoken about black holes already. If you move towards a black hole, that's warping space-time, right? Now, things that get sucked into a black hole, as in if you pass the event horizon of a black hole, you're not coming back out of it, right? That is a point at which once you go past it, boom, you are going into you're moving towards the center of that mass forever. Mm-hmm. And I literally mean forever, because time dilation means such that as you get closer and closer to the literal point that is the center of the mass of the black hole, your time is
forever.
Is elongated such that you never actually make it, right? So remember, as we were saying, your time slows down as you are experiencing more gravity, essentially. If you are coming to where all of this mass is into a single point, you're experiencing more and more gravity to the point that your time is slowing down more and more and more. It's like the idea of there's you and a door, right? You are X distance away from a door. Now you cross half of that distance, and then half of that distance, and then half of that distance, then half of that distance. You could never actually make it to the door, right? Mm-hmm. You could be infinitesimally close, but you'd never actually make it. And think of it as a sort of similar thing, in that you're getting closer and closer and closer, but the closer that you get, the longer it's going to take for you to get to that point, so you never actually make it. Now, obviously, if you were to go to a black hole, you would die. You would be absolutely torn to shreds, just ripped apart under the sheer mass and gravity of that black hole. Now, there's an idea that a black hole, it sucks in information, right? There's the idea that information is spit out somewhere else.
A white hole.
Like quite literally, like the opposite of a black hole. Yeah. Like black holes take in information and destroy it. But white holes spit out that information somewhere else. Now, because of how black holes work and how black holes warp space-time. Now, think of it this way, right? If we've got that blanket analogy again. Now, let's say the blanket is taut, right? But bear in mind, the blanket doesn't need to be flat, right? Because the blanket is going to seem flat to us anyway, because we're like living on the blanket. Like we can't conceive of the sort of differences in the blanket, in the same sense that, like, you know, we can't like see space bending around mass, like massive objects.
Or the curvature of the earth.
Yeah, we can't see that. So now if the blanket was to be taut, and you were to have a weight on it, like say, you know, that bowling ball mass in the size of a marble, boom, you drop it down. The blanket is really sort of distorted, displaced. There's that marble hanging, pulling it down. Bend this blanket, take the other end of the blanket, fold it around and bring it to meet where that marble is. You've got two different points on that blanket connected by a shorter distance than you can get to just by following the path of the blanket, right? Because of the displacement of this marble. Now, what that means is that, you know, if we think of this as being a black hole again, that means that a black hole can conceivably connect two different points in space-time, right? Yeah. So you could go into a black hole and be spit out at a different point in space and time than where you were when you went in. So conceivably, you could potentially use a black hole to travel backwards in time. However, as I've said, what happens when you go into a black hole?
You get crushed and stretched and everything's really bad for you.
Exactly. So a Kara black hole kind of solves that problem. Now, a Kara black hole, the idea behind it is that, you know, it kind of develops from neutron stars in such a way that it's stabilized so that if you were to go into it, it wouldn't tear you apart. Mass is being held in a very small space, but it's stabilized in such a way that you could conceivably pass through it without being destroyed, right? You don't need to understand why or how. I've read about it and I got it, but it's not necessary to understand exactly how. Like it's deep physics stuff. It's stars, black holes, all of that sort of stuff, right? So if you have a black hole that you can pass through, this theoretical sort of concept of that sort of black hole, then you could potentially go through it and appear at a different point of space-time than the one that you started at. That's one way of doing it. So there's Einstein-Rosen bridges, which I've mentioned already. Luke, do you know what an Einstein-Rosen bridge is?
I actually don't know, other than from Thor.
Oh, so you do know what an Einstein-Rosen bridge is, I'm absolutely certain. So I'm going to do the explanation that everyone does. And, you know, some people love, some people hate. So I've got a piece of paper. Piece of paper is space-time, right? To get from this point on the piece of paper, one point on the leftmost part of the piece of paper, to a point on the rightmost part of the piece of paper, you would have to travel from the left point of the paper to the right point of the paper, across the plane of the paper.
Too long.
It's a long, long time. So what I can do instead is I can fold the piece of paper so that those two points are directly next to each other.
Ah, yes,
and
please.
All you need to then do is just...
We're there.
There you go. You can now travel there immediately. That is an Einstein-Rosen bridge, and that is a wormhole. Essentially, you're warping space-time in such a way that you're creating a tear, a hole, a bridge between two different points of space-time. And what that means is that instead of having to travel, 10 light years to get from point A to point B, you can use the folding of space-time and the hole that you've made to travel that in a much, much shorter effective distance, right?
Yep.
Now, you're thinking of this as just being space, probably, because that's how we conceive of things, because we don't experience time in the same way that you experience space. Bear in mind, space-time linked. So if you can travel to a different point in space with one of them holes, you can also conceivably travel to a different point in time because you're moving somewhere else in space-time. So that's why people say wormholes could be used for sort of time travel. There's also this idea of, because there are different... because you can experience time at a different rate, right? You could have a wormhole in one place and, have the other side of the wormhole in another place. If one of those places is experiencing more gravity, there's more sort of gravity in that area, then that wormhole is going to be experiencing time differently from the other end of the wormhole.
Sorry, what?
Okay, so if you were to take a wormhole, two ends of the wormhole, one end of the wormhole is experiencing more gravity than the other end, then one end of the wormhole is going to experiencing time differently to the other end of the wormhole.
Yeah.
This doesn't really work. I've kind of looked into this and read about this. Apparently, there are quite a lot of problems with this. It doesn't work as simply as this. But people have kind of proposed that you could do that so that you've essentially got then a time machine, right? So you've got a stable wormhole that you've opened that we don't know how to do, by the way. We don't even know if it's possible. You've opened a stable wormhole and you've got one end running at a different rate to the other end, which means that one end can just kind of be in the future and the other end can be kind of stuck in the past. So you go through it and you hop into the past. Or you go through one and you hop into the future. Doesn't really work. There's so many problems with it. But conceptually, that was an idea that someone came up with at some point. Doesn't actually work. But it's an interesting thought. These are all ways of traveling to the past. There are lots of problems with them. But do you know what differentiates the past from the future? Now, what we were saying earlier about, bending, if we were to take space-time as a piece of paper, bend it, loop it around back on itself, kind of like the roller coaster scenario. What is the difference between past and future there, right? What is the difference between those two things? How do we differentiate?
Entropy?
Yes. So what is entropy? Parallel.
Entropy is the tendency of the universe to decay into a state of disorder. Time has an arrow, is how they talk about it, and we don't see things on average moving against entropy.
Yes, you're right. There are specific ways of describing this to make people not get mad that I'm also not really going to be able to do off the top of my head. But so entropy is this really, really interesting concept that is relatively simple, but I think people often kind of misunderstand what it means, right? So entropy is a measurement of a system's, essentially a measure of a system's energy that is unavailable for doing useful work. So kind of a measurement of disorder, of chaos, people say, right? So from past, moving towards the future, there is increasing entropy in the universe, just overall. Now, the idea is that in a closed system, it will always tend towards entropy, the entropy will increase over time in a closed system. Whether or not there are actual closed systems within the universe is another thing. That's why, human bodies do overall increase entropy, but they decrease it for a little bit, right? So it's sort of like, do you know how we use chemical energy, right, to do useful work, essentially, right? You would think that human bodies, they take outside things, they bring them in, and they increase their order, and then they sort of spit them out. So it's decreasing entropy. But overall, if you were to look at the entire system, the entropy is...
Yes, because they give off heat and they give off waste, and like the amount of entropy in the universe is increased. Yeah. It's just that we sort of ride the wave of cascading entropy to have little pockets of negative entropy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Just these little pockets of negative entropy don't sort of pull the system, tend the system in a negative direction. It's it's still moving forward.
But ultimately, every time you eat food, or every time you like, you've taken plant matter in that's been photosynthesizing, whatever, blah blah blah, mm-hmm. you've taken energy that was in a quite a good high order state, like a sugar, mm-hmm. like an available, and turned it into heat,
yeah.
which is like the worst type of energy, basically, because yeah. it's kind of crap and can't be used for as much. And basically, eventually, everything turns into heat.
Yeah.
It's crap. It's just the worst energy.
This is where we get
Although
to the idea
I like
of
being warm.
Yeah. This is where we get to the idea of sort of the heat death of the universe, right? Where things are sort of spread out and just sort of vibrating, and none of the energy can be is ordered or can be sort of used for useful work. It's difficult concept. This is what I'm saying. It seems really simple. It's just moving towards chaos, moving towards disorder. That's an easy way of describing it, and it will give you a decent understanding of it. But also, if you only think of it as chaos or disorder, then inherently you're going to be confused, because human bodies don't, you know, from the face of it, seem to increase chaos or disorder.
Yeah.
So the reason I'm just touching on entropy here to give you an idea of what the concept is, basically increasing disorder, a decrease of energy that's available for useful work, is that that's how you would then differentiate between past and future in that sort of scenario. So, you know, yeah, space-time can bend round back on itself so that you're following what seems to be a forward path, you know, like the roller coaster doing the loop-de-loop. It looks like you're going forward from your perspective, but if from an outside perspective, you're looping and going back. Now, how would you differentiate between past and future in that scenario is, okay, well, the overall entropy increases in the future direction. So if you are at a point that has got an overall lower entropy in the universe, then you have gone to the past. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right. Good. Think of entropy as just a timer that is ticking upwards, just constantly, forever, from T0 to T end, you know, T infinity. That entropy ticker is just going up, and that's how you differentiate between past and future. Right. That's a very, very simplified time. Every single time I talk, I'm like, physicists are going to be so mad. They're so mad. But I do just want everyone to bear in mind that these are not sort of, this is an intro to this sort of stuff. This is a taster. There are going to be mistakes here, probably. There are going to be things that aren't explained as well as they could be. This is not a full course for you. This is something that, if you're interested in this, look into it some more. Read some of it yourself. I've got links below that will explain it better than I can, and all of these sorts of things. So don't ever take a SciGuys episode as the complete sort of rounded thing on a topic, like, you know, a complete view of a topic. It's an intro in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
So that's entropy. That's how we would differentiate between past and future. Now, let's say that all of these sorts of theoretical models of traveling to the past work. And to be very clear, all of the things we've just spoken about, we're not saying that this is definite. You can absolutely travel to the past. People think that this is possible from the equations that they've looked at, from, you know, sort of basically doing a lot of maths. They said, hey, if this is how this works, then this should be mathematically possible, you know, like x equals one sort of thing. Like, yes, this is, we could do it. We don't know that that's the case. They could have made mistakes somewhere. There could be information that we just don't have yet that blows it all out of the water. Think of it in this way, right? When it comes to sort of time travel, we're maybe at a point now where it's like before we discovered the atom, right? We think this is how it works. We there are some things that don't work. And we could discover something that means, oh wow, this changes a lot of our foundational knowledge, or it makes things a lot more easy to understand, or oh, now all of this sort of stuff makes sense, right? We're not saying here that time travel is definitely possible, that traveling to the past is definitely possible. We're saying that theoretically some people think that it could be possible in these certain circumstances, but that also doesn't mean that it is possible for a person to hop in a machine, go back to their past, and make a bunch of changes, right? That's not what we're saying. Like, realistically, at the point we're at now, we would be doing this with photons or even smaller things and trying to send them back in the past. And people have done experiments, actually, sort of looking at what would happen to photons if you could send them back in time. And they model it, but they also can't model it to send them back in time, because we can't even model that properly yet, right? Like, we're not at a point where we can be like, oh, this is what would happen if you were to send a photon back. We make models that are mathematically very, very similar to sending a photon back in time, but not models that are exactly sending a photon back in time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I want to ask you, Luke, if you were to travel back in time, what would be some problems with that?
Well, It depends on what type of time travel movie you're in.
But why is that? Like, what broadly, what would the problem be?
Well, because anything you do could potentially mean that you actually didn't go back in time.
Which would be?
A paradox.
Exactly. So a paradox is... What's a paradox?
It's a plot hole in the universe.
Yeah.
So, for example, you go back in time, you stand on a leaf, that leaf... was going to be eaten by a bug. That bug was going to fly into this plant. That plant was going... You were going to eat that plant. You were going to choke on a leaf in that plant. And then you were going to meet the love of your life and have a baby. And then that baby was going to invent a time machine. And then you're going to go in that time machine and go back in time. And then you don't... When you go back in time, you pick that leaf up and burn it. Now, you're back in time. So that stuff must have happened, but you've destroyed the way... that made it happen.
Yeah, you kind of touched on the butterfly effect there as well, which is some super interesting stuff. So a paradox is essentially a contradiction in the universe. Something is true whilst something that is, well, something else is true, but also these two things can't be true at the same time. It cannot be true in this scenario that you burned the leaf that caused you to go back in time, and also that
you're in back in time,
you're back
to,
in
burn
time
it.
To burn the leaf.
Yeah.
Right? So there are some different paradoxes. I mean, first off, there's the Fermi paradox. Do you know what the Fermi paradox is?
Where are all the aliens?
Now, yes, there's a Fermi paradox for time. Can you think of what the Fermi paradox for time
travel
might
be? Where
are
all the time travelers?
Exactly. So the idea is, so the Fermi paradox is, if there are aliens, right, where are all the aliens? Why have we not met any aliens? If life exists elsewhere in the universe, you'd think that we would have been able to detect it by now, right? Now, on top of that, if you were to then take that and tune it toward time travel, that means that, hey, if people can travel in time, why have we never seen any time travelers? There are solutions to this. Maybe you can only travel back in time to the point where the time machine was created, right? Because if you were to build a time machine, say that sort of wormhole idea that I was talking about earlier, you would only be able to travel as far back as, you know, the point where you first created that time machine. Because before that, it didn't exist, you know? So that's one possible solution. Maybe there's another reason that you know, time travelers don't come back. Maybe they do come back and we just don't notice, right? There are any number of reasons, any number of ways to solve that paradox. It's more sort of a question of, hey, if they exist, then where are they, right? It's a good question.
Lots of people have been claiming to be time travelers. We just don't believe them.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's one of the easiest paradoxes to solve. There's the Novikov self-consistency principle. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't.
Oh, this is a good one. Okay, so let's say, for example, you have a professor, right? A professor says, okay, here.
Look, Professor Corey, thank you.
This is time travel. Aha! This is the solution to time travel. And you're like, where did you get this from? And he's like, some random man gave it to me many years ago. But I don't know where it came from or anything like that, right? You're like, okay, that's fine. So you take the solution to time travel and you're like, oh Christ, oh cool, great, I've got a time machine now. What should I do? You travel back in time and you meet your professor. And you're like, oh my God, it worked. And he's like, what? What worked? Who the hell are you, you crazy man? And he's like, look, this is what it is. And you give him the solution to time travel. And then he's like, oh, thank you. And then you go up on you know, your time traveling life. What just happened there is that you got the solution for time travel from your professor. And then you used it to build a time machine. And then you traveled back in time. And then you gave that solution for time travel to your professor. Where did the solution for time travel come from? Where is the start point?
You stumbled into a time loop.
It's a causal loop. Exactly. There is no point where you can jump in and say cause to effect. Because cause to effect... Because one cause leads to an effect, which causes the initial effect. Which then it just loops back around, right? So in the third Harry Potter movie, this kind of comes about. But it's not really dwelt upon. Harry is almost about to die from Dementors, right? And he then sees his dad cast a Patronus charm, and it's a Patronus that is a corporeal Patronus. It's a stag, and he's like, oh, wow, cool, great, nice. My dad saved me. My dad's alive. And then he goes back in time and realizes, wait, it wasn't my dad that did that. That was me. And so he casts a corporeal Patronus that he's not actually been able to do before. And when he's asked, well, how did you know that you could do it? And he's like, well, I'd seen myself do it already. So I knew that I could do it. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
There's like, you weren't able to do this thing before. And what gave you the ability to, you know, the confidence to be able to do it was that you'd seen yourself do it. And so then where is the starting point that, you know, that you were able to do that? It's not exactly the same, but it's probably one of the closest ones.
It pretty much is. Yeah.
Because in fiction, it's unsatisfying, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, because in our lives, cause makes an effect happen. And that's how stories work for us. That's how we make them satisfying, because cause, effect, that makes happens has another cause that makes another effect, and that's literally what stories are. Mm-hmm. Thing happens that causes thing that causes thing that causes thing that causes thing. emotional catharsis, end.
That's like half of Shakespeare.
Yeah. That's it. That's you got stories now.
Shakespeare from the past? I think you might be.
But then if we were to loop that back around.
If you're Shakespeare, how did you...
Don't worry about it. But that's another paradox. That's the self-consistency principle to an extent, right? I mean, there's also the sort of idea that, you know, you would need things to be self-consistent in that, again, we bring it back to Harry Potter. Now, J.K. Rowling sucks, obviously, but this one book did a great job of having consistent time travel that genuinely actually works and, you know, could be used in a universe without being problematic. And then she went and ruined it with The Cursed Child. But we won't talk about that. We'll just talk about Prisoner of Azkaban.
Kind of ruined it with Harry Potter 5 as well, where she went, oh, wait, all of the time travel devices are gone now.
Yeah, because she wrote in time travel and she was like, oh, well, why can't we just use this? But she'd already written a reason to not use it, but she didn't realize it. Anyway.
There actually is a very good solution that she could have used to her own problem.
Yeah.
You could have it that time turners essentially do is they don't allow you to undo the past once the past has happened. They allow you to have more time to make something happen before it has. Mm-hmm. So if Sirius Black gets kissed by a Dementor, that's happened.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it. And you, no amount of going back in time, if you went back in time and tried to stop it happening, loads of stuff would get in your way and you wouldn't actually do it because it happened. Whereas... So you can't actually undo stuff. It just gives you more time in which to do stuff before something happens.
This is why it was, for a long, long time, my favorite time travel story.
Yeah.
I love Doctor Who. I loved, you know, I really loved H.G. Wells' the Time Machine. I loved the film of The Time Machine. I love time travel stories. Bill and Ted, anything that with time travel, I find really, really interesting. Tenet and all of these sorts of things, right? I find it really cool to build it in a way that can be satisfying and consistent and work. Harry Potter did that, and then it broke it. Because what happens in Harry Potter is that you have just one set of things that can happen. Mm-hmm. It's not even just like, you know, that the past is set once it happens. It's that you were always a part of that past. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anything that you can go back into the past and, okay, you can maybe change things from your own perspective in that they thought that they saved Buckbeak because they thought Buckbeak died, but actually the entire time they had saved Buckbeak. It's just from their perspective, the initial time, they assumed that Buckbeak had died because they heard a slicing sound and Hagrid was crying. But actually, the slicing sound was a pumpkin and Hagrid was crying because Buckbeak was set free, right? Like, it's so bloody perfect.
It's
a perfect way of doing
time
travel.
It's really good.
Because it's consistent. It just means that, you know, you can't change the past. You can only go back and be involved in it.
And essentially, Harry and Hermione are moving around at this close to the speed of light. In order to save Sirius.
Yeah, it's bloody, it's so brilliant.
Yeah.
And then it's just broken a little bit. But that's kind of self-consistency there, right? You can see that. So you travel back into the past and you're thinking, well, you can't, look, why don't you just change your past? Why don't you make X thing happen? Well, you can't change the past. And that's that sort of consistency there, right? In that you cannot travel back and change something that has already happened. But you traveling back means that you would always travel back, which means that you've always been a part of that past. So how can you make a change if you were always there, right? It's like, oh, what if I were to make a change by going and doing something that had already happened, right? Like you can't do that. You can't make a change by doing the same thing, mm-hmm. right? Like, okay, I'm going to go back in time and I'm going to stop World War II by making everything that led to World War II happen. Right? Like you're not changing anything. You're just being involved in it.
It just turns out that you did all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
What's wrong with you, man? Why did you do all that stuff?
A boring weekend.
Did you make Franz Ferdinand's driver turn on that street?
I really don't like the band, and I just didn't want them. I didn't want them to have a name. So we're now about to get to the most common paradox that's spoken about. It's the grandfather paradox.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I said, you know, abuelos at the start, grandfathers. The grandfather paradox, what is that?
It's where if you go back in time and you kill your Spanish grandfather, mm-hmm. then you were never born.
Exactly.
Because you're not Spanish.
Right. So if you were to get a time machine, hop back in time, meet your granddad before he had conceived your parents, mm-hmm. or one of your parents, one would hope, and you go, hey, granddaddy, bang, you're dead.
Hola, granddaddy.
Hola, abuelo. Bang, are you dead? That's went Italian for a moment. So you kill your granddad. So, wait, hold on. That means that your granddad didn't make, you know, let's say your mother, and that means that your mother didn't have you, and that means that you don't exist, so you can't travel back in time to kill your grandfather, so do you stop existing? But then your grandfather does exist, and then, oh, well, that means that your mom exists. Well, that means that you exist. Okay, so then you can travel back in time to kill your grandfather, but then if you kill him, then... He doesn't exist.
He was never your grandfather. Boom. And your exactly. mother cheated on your father.
But the Futurama thing where Fry travels back in time, accidentally kills who he thinks is his grandfather. It turns out that he's his own grandfather. And he becomes his own grandfather.
Brilliant.
Brilliant, right? Yeah. So that's kind of the grandfather paradox. And there are ways of kind of getting around it. And look, you've kind of already touched on one that I found in paper that I found was super interesting. Do you know what it might be? Something you said already that that could solve the grandfather paradox.
Something along the lines of like the universe updates and it turns out that the causality that you thought got you there, a different causality sort of fills its space.
I mean, maybe, but that's not the one that I was reading about. So I read this paper and it'll be linked down below. It's super interesting. Wherein... it's this sort of it's looking through the perspective of CTCs, closed timeline curves, right? And the idea is to solve for the sort of grandfather paradox. And the idea basically goes such that as you try to change something, essentially, you know, it's you're going to be diverted away such that you can't change that thing. But as you get closer and closer to the point of change, that sort of axis of change, the diversions become sort of bigger and bigger. So what that means is that if you're about to, say, shoot your granddad, right? Well, oh, there's the bullet in the gun. It misfires. It doesn't work, right? There's a faulty bullet. Or, you know, like something happens to stop you. And because all things are conceivably possible, right? Then more and more unlikely things are going to start happening to divert that you away and to keep the sort of timeline consistent.
Yeah.
Now, this sounds like a very sort of sci-fi explanation, but this was kind of modeled with quantum particles. It was really, really interesting sort of to look into this in that they modeled it in a way that, okay, they said, okay, this is basically mathematically similar to this sort of subatomic particle going, or this sort of quantum particle going back in time and changing the sort of, changing what led it to be there. So if you think about this, you've got a you've got a time machine, right? And you've got a billiard ball and you hit the billiard ball towards the time machine to go into the time machine and come out at another point in time. As it's moving towards the time machine, its future self comes out and knocks it away from the time machine so that it doesn't go into the time machine.
Yeah.
So that's a paradox, obviously, right? I mean, if you hit the billiard ball into the time machine at one point, then it needs to come out, obviously. But if it's coming out at the point before it went in and knocking itself away from going in, then it didn't ever go in. Now, if you think about it in this way, the solution to that would be more sort of, if you hit the billiard ball in to the time machine and set the time machine such that the billiard ball comes out to hit itself away from going into the time machine. Now, when that happens, because you need to be, the universe needs to be self-consistent, oh, maybe there's a slight sort of inconsistency in the sort of in the ground. You know, there's a slight bump or something. Oh, but it knocks the billiard ball coming out of the time machine into a slightly different direction, so it misses the billiard ball going in. You know, things like this. Or if we're getting to be like really crazy, improbable, it phases through. So the idea here is that it's about probability and possibility. There is an impossible thing, right? An impossible thing, which is this paradox. The billiard ball cannot both go into the time machine and come out of the time machine and knock itself away from the time machine before going in. Those two things are not consistent. That is impossible. Therefore, the universe will find, and I'm anthropomorphizing here and I'm simplifying, and this is not exactly it. It's a little bit more complex than this, obviously. The universe will basically find a probable thing, or an improbable thing even, that is still more probable than this impossible thing.
Yes.
Because there's an impossible thing that can't happen, that means that something that is possible, no matter how improbable, is definitely more probable than the impossible thing. So something that is as improbable as, say, a billiard ball phasing through another billiard ball, let's say that it's quantum mechanically, theoretically possible, if incredibly improbable, still more probable than something that is impossible. Therefore, that will have to happen for the things to stay consistent, right?
Brilliant.
That's kind of the explanation. It's super insane. It's so interesting, but it's a potential solution to, you know, that grandfather paradox.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so that is a potential solution to the grandfather paradox. I just find it really interesting that, you know, we're finding these ways of time travel potentially being possible. Now, what could happen in the future is that we discover something that gives us an understanding of the universe, gives us an understanding of physics, something that marries quantum mechanics to, you know, the sort of physics of the bigger world that we live in, and makes them fit very, very cleanly and very, very, very comfortably, that we don't necessarily have right now, right? Something, we can have something that unifies these sort of theories absolutely perfectly, that makes us understand, oh, time travel isn't possible. We're wrong about these certain things. So that's where this is coming from, right? In that time travel seems like it could be potentially possible now, given our understanding of the universe, but we don't know that it is definitely possible, and it's difficult to prove. And there could be a theory that comes along that shows that actually all of these kinds of time travel are impossible. But there could equally be a theory that comes along and says, oh, these are all somewhat possible. And hey, it could be possible for quantum particles, because what I read there in I think that same paper was that essentially if you've got, say, you know, a quantum particle, something on the quantum scale, right, they experience probability differently than we do. They can exist in sort of superposition where they're kind of both things and neither things at the same time, kind of like Schrodinger's cat is both alive and dead at the same time. This photon, or this sort of, you know, like quantum particle, has got both probabilities are equally probable, and it's not collapsed into one of the things yet. So the way that this was sort of described is that this, let's call it just a photon, right? Just for simplicity's sake, this photon goes through this sort of time hole and goes back in time and causes itself to not be able to go back in time to cause itself, right? That means that you've got two possibilities here. Either the photon goes back in time and stops itself from going back in time, or the photon, so it doesn't go back in time, or the photon goes back in time and, you know, I mean, it follows through.
Yeah.
Because those two things are sort of possibilities, it basically has, they're basically both half true. Right, at the same time.
Yeah.
So the photon exists at a point where it is like it's both gone back in time and not gone back in time. We can understand that as being like sort of a 50-50 split of those two things.
Yeah.
And so that's just how it goes through. Right. It just works so that both of those things are kind of happening and not happening at the same time. And that solves, look, I understood it when I read it, yep. Trying to explain it. It's really difficult. I would definitely recommend going to read it yourself. But effectively, for things on the quantum scale, these paradoxes may not be as problematic as they seem to be on a larger scale. Yeah. Because quantum mechanics is weird.
Yep. Yep.
But that is time travel. That's all I've got time for. Aha! Today. Is there anything else that you want to add to this?
No, I think we've done a pretty good job there of covering a very difficult and confusing subject.
Well, great. That means there's just one thing left, and it's the quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Time travel edition.
Well, congratulations, Luke, on winning the quickfire quiz. This one is out of order. Okay, so the rules for the quickfire quiz were the same as never. I will ask one question. That's one question between you and everyone listening. You must answer before I've even asked the question. And if you answer last, you win.
Yay!
Got it?
Fantastic. I'm pretty sure that you have to ask before I've answered the question is one of the questionnaire questions on the ADHD quiz.
So, my question for you is...
Yes.
Wrong.
No!
The question is, what is another name for an Einstein-Rosen bridge?
A wormhole?
Ding, ding, ding.
Hell
that
yeah.
Is correct. Did you beat Luke? Let us know down in the comments, I guess.
But wait, Corey, this is a patron episode, so we need to thank all of our patrons.
We do need to thank all of our new patrons, don't we, Luke?
Yes, we blimmin' well do.
So let's get thanking these patrons then. If you want to be thanked, by the way, go ahead and sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/guys, and we'll thank you at the end of the next Patreon vote episode. But let's get into it. Thank you to Oda.
Thank you, JackoFruit432.
Thank you to Ocean Arrow.
Thank you, Colton H.
Thank you, Beth Austin.
Thank you to Mars.
Oh, I love that. The planet Mars is thanking us.
I was thinking the god. I was thinking the god Mars, actually.
Oh, Mars, the god of war.
Yeah.
Ooh, well, I want to say a big old thank you to Mouse of Doom.
I want to thank Michael Neves.
I want to thank Matthias Versailles.
Versailles?
No, it's not Versailles.
Ah, okay.
There's not an A. It's French. I don't know, man.
I want to send a big thank you to Demisexual Blanket Fort.
That's what a coincidence, because I want to send a big old thank you to Ethan Ganzel.
Why was that a coincidence?
It's literally a coincidence.
Well, thank you, Sparrow18.
And finally, a big old thanks to Emmy. Thank you all for
thank
joining
you
us
all.
On our Patreon. As I said, you can go and do that. Patreon.com/thatsideguys.
What a bunch of legends.
Well, that is all from us, but before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to Executive Producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit, and thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me into the past, where you will follow me on Twitter next. Yesterday.
Hello!
Hi, and welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, wonderful stories of the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host,